You know, it's interesting hearing everybody just briefly, very briefly, describe themselves. We have a lot of talent in this room. We've got some real accomplishment here. And we were talking earlier, I was saying that this is the room in which I'd like to do a lot of listening. Somebody was talking about how long Robert was talking about eight greats and all that. It caused me to think of the first amplifier I ever built. It was in 1957. My God. A while ago. Anyway, too. Well, I'm of legal age.
I was four.
And so because we want to get out of here at a reasonable hour to be courteous to the janitors and whoever else is here, I'll be quiet. I just want to say Bob Smith, who's with help me out.
Physio control.
Oh, it is fit. Okay. With physio is
Division of Stryker now.
He's the brains behind the audio that go into defibrillators. And a heck of a lot's involved in that. I don't know it all, but I have learned some little bit about it. It's very interesting. JJ is known to not everybody in town, but most. But not just in town, out of town, too. He's a... how many patents have you got, JJ?
Yes.
Yes. I thought so. he's a very gifted guy. I look forward to what they're going to present this evening. So I'll be quiet. JJ and Bob. Yeah.
So you want to turn me on here? I guess I should introduce myself. I'm a retired electrical engineer. Doesn't that sound familiar? But I'm going to talk first about some of the basic physics and a little bit of the mathematics and stuff. And then Bob, who has all the practical freeware and cheapware here, is going to talk. I use MATLAB, but nobody wants to pay $3,000, and I understand. And you don't need most of it. So the whole topic is, you want me to do this where? You know, when you get into the little room, you can't understand what it's doing. No articulation, nothing. Well, this is basically, how can you fix it a little bit, and how can you work around it? So let's start about, what does a small untreated room do? Well, it has lots of really early reflections. For instance, one of the things we have set up there has a reflection of about 3/4 of a millisecond. This does a couple of things. It gives you terrible frequency shaping. It destroys articulation, so you can't understand what the words are. It destroys the articulation of instruments, too, of course. And in general, if you're trying to do something like balance a stereo mix, well, good luck with that. You need to do something. What can you do? So now, how do we find these reflections where you can't just fix it, which is to say you get a bulldozer and a contractor, which is really the right way to fix it most of the time, to be really honest. And don't hire an acoustics person, not an architect. There's been a war between acousticians and architects since the first day I stepped into the field. The architects like these large, flat, shiny, pretty surfaces. And the acousticians, we just don't like that very much. So where do they come from? Walls, ceiling, floors, my face. If I go up there and stand next to that thing and we run a test, you'll see it in my face. I mean, you literally see a reflection off my chest. What do we do about them? That's harder, but we'll show you some stuff. And what can't you fix? Well, really low frequency stuff. But in general, it's hard to hang stuff from the ceiling. Sometimes it's hard to put stuff on the floor, but sometimes putting some in front of you between you and the speakers helps. Sometimes having a desk between you and the speakers is bad, but it might be better than bouncing it off the floor anyhow, because you can lay a piece of cloth on the table or something. It all depends on exactly what the situation is. So if you want to flip that. Now this is a point we want to make. We're going to talk about using a lot of sound absorbing materials. Make sure they're fireproofed. How many people remember the Station nightclub? You never want to have that happen. So, no, do not use, egg crate foam anymore. Yeah. Do not use stuff that burns. Just don't do it. Really, don't do it.
JJ, can you assume that if there's no rating on it, that it's not rated?
I would assume that it's probably not correct. I mean, we've had an experience where we found that our mineral wool insulation wasn't ASTM rated, but given that the only atmosphere that will burn in is if you have difluorine dioxide in the atmosphere, it doesn't burn. But in general, you want an ASTM rating for everything. And by the way, if you have a difluorine dioxide atmosphere, get out. Actually, you won't make it, but I hope you never do.
So can I interject here? The correct answer is if the fire marshal asks you for the material safety data sheet and it doesn't have an ASTM rating on it, you can expect him to shut you down.
He's going to explode.
And when we were having a phone conversation, conference call about this, I looked on Amazon to see what fireproof stuff or what foam they had. And there were only two or three out of the dozens, if not hundreds, of foams that they had that had a rating on it. And it was very difficult to complain about that to Amazon, but I started something, and that was, a month ago, and I haven't heard a thing since.
You have to call and talk to the people, the vendors who actually make the materials. On Oralex's site, they now have a section where you can go down and look and see some of this exact information available on their website telling you about it. But it's hard to find that information. However, you need it or else the fire marshal will give you grief.
And what's the price differential between buying the good stuff versus not?
Well, I'll just give you an example. I know that the Oralex's Maxwell 4-inch thick is about $100 a panel now. It used to be $200 a panel, but they've either done something to economize. It's about $100 a panel now, and that's for a 4x8x4-inch thick sheet.
I tell you, the curtains in here are ASTM rated, and they were about $24,000.
One of the things about fabric that's ASTM rated, it's a lot of it is borate treated, so you have to be careful because that can act, you know, don't chew on it, it's toxic. I'm not joking. It's toxic, but it doesn't burn. So what do small rooms have? Parallel hard walls, parallel ceiling. If you're lucky, the room will be 8 feet tall, 8 feet wide, and 16 feet long, and that's just what you don't want. But life is like that a lot. So, you have short dimensions, especially a lot of times I was stuck in hallways back when I did this stuff. Hallways present two problems, one of which is they're short this way, and the other of which is that echo that's 100 milliseconds delayed from that 50 foot down and back can really confuse the daylights out of you. So there's a number of problems you can have in a little room or in a ad hoc room. I mean, if we have time, we may play around a little bit with the instrument storage room over there, which is very definitely not an ideal acoustic environment. But it all comes down to the reflections. If you're in an absorbent room, rejoice, because you just won. And it never happened. Next. What do you get? Well, flutter echoes, you know, that effect you get. You get some bass modes because obviously you're going to get bass reinforcement. And if your room is 8x8x16, you're really going to get some serious bass reinforcement in that one. You get some early reflections just from the speakers, which is the first thing we're going to demonstrate when we get the demonstrations. Early reflections give you nasty frequency shaping. They can completely wreck your stereo imaging. Even if they're symmetric, they can wreck your stereo imaging by giving you way too many early cues. And yes, I know some people say they help with pan pots. Well, we can get into an argument with that, and I can play them stuff, and we can have an argument. But no, you don't want early reflections in a studio. You just don't. Asymmetries, if you're doing stereo, you really want the same transfer function from both speakers. If you're against the wall like that, it's not going to happen. That's the good news. The bad news is if you set up something symmetric in a room, you're going to maximize the bad reflections because now you're going to have the same time delay both directions and you're going to hit the worst case transfer function and you're going to have to deal with that somehow. So you win some, you lose some. Or maybe I should say you lose some, you lose some. But that's life. And noise. This is the one thing we can't do much about. If it's noisy, it's time to talk to the promoter.
Speaking of which, JJ, yes.
What?
Can we ask you to be on the other side instead of front of the speaker where it's feeding back?
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm just insensitive to that too many years. Too many years of talking at the AES, that's why. Okay, so now what's going to happen is Bob is going to show you Hey, quick, you're going to have to talk about what the system is and so on, and I'm going to go out here and watch.
So we're a little ahead of ourselves. We're going to just do an ad hoc measurement here. We'll explain what's going on in greater detail. We're just going to give you one right now. But be aware, I'm going to do a sine sweep.
Plug your ears.
One meter away from the speaker, it's going to be 90 dB, so I'm going to get hammered really hard. But it's finger in the ears time. So here we go. And I'm not going to explain all this at this moment. I'm just going to give JJ something to talk about.
Okay, you take a look, what you see there is intensity versus time. Now, you'll notice the way we set that up, the speaker's about 2 meters from the mic, but we don't really care what that distance is. What we care is the time delay between the first arrival, go back to the first arrival there, okay, and that first reflection. Now, that is about 3/4 of a millisecond?
Yeah, 750 microseconds. So it's time for the other handy-dandy thing, and this will be made available to you guys. The speed of sound, you figure out by whatever temperature you've got in the room. There's a formula. It's already embedded in this Excel spreadsheet that I'll make available. You figure the temperature, so you get the speed of sound. In this case, speed of sound is 1,126 feet per second if it's 67 in the air. But this one is the one that we're going to work with. Okay. There's 3 centimeters at each end for a handhold.
Okay.
So I have dual system because I work in meters most of the time. It's easier to do all the math. But the 730 microseconds we've got gives an additional quarter of a meter to the distance we already have. This first arrival.
The point is this difference is 3/4... Is a quarter of a meter. The distance between the first arrival and the reflection is a quarter of a meter. That's the thing you want to remember. So what we have here is a piece of cord which we measured between the speaker and the mic, and then we added the quarter of a meter to the end of it. So now if you hold up one end of it.
So this distance is 2.25 meters total.
Yes. But what we did is we measured it here, and then we have a quarter of a meter.
You got 3 centimeters in the end to count for. Okay.
And you'll notice that when you stretch this, it hits the wall. Now, this is actually a really handy thing to use to figure it out, because you may not know we know it's a wall here, but you can use this to figure out where your reflection's coming from. It'll work just as well if it's back behind the speaker. You know, there's no rule that says it has to be this side. It could be behind the speaker. It could be behind the mic. You don't really care where it is. You find that. And that's the first thing you do. And then the second thing you do, of course, is you fix it. But we'll get to that in a minute. But now there's something else I want to point out about this. I wish I had a thing. You notice we have another bunch of bumps here. You see this other bunch of bumps? Yeah, and that, I'm just going to tell you because I know it's the floor bounce. And you know, you're going to have another one out there, and I'm not actually sure what that's from, but it's probably not the ceiling, but you can, by taking string and doing these things, you can figure out where are all these reflections coming from.
Does the floor bounce have a bunch of them because it's carpeted?
Well, the floor bounce, let's see.
Why is there more than one?
Probably because we got all this stuff laying between it.
Yep.
We have a lot of different. We have a bunch of stuff on the floor. There's this tray here. We're probably seeing something from this tray. I mean, when you do this kind of thing, and if you measure all these, you'll find this stuff. You'll find out where it is.
In my presentation, I've got an annotated picture that walks us through doing that, finding the stuff. Okay?
Finding the stuff.
Yep. Yes,
but if you take a look here, you notice we have a little bounce here from something. We have this one from the wall. We have another one. I don't know what that's from. We have another one right there.
Yep.
That might actually be the trough.
So where's the straight path?
The straight path is the very first thing.
That's the straight path.
Okay. And the trick with the string is you just measure the length between your speaker and your mic, and you just add these distances for all the other distances, and then you just bend the string around until you find out what it hits.
So you've calibrated that to be zero.
Yeah, well, it's not. Well, the point is you don't know what the latency is. So we don't care about the latency. We just know that if you just take the string, you start with a distance between the mic and the speaker, you've just equalized all that out.
Why was it you added 1/4 instead of the 0.75 or whatever?
Well, 0.75, it's 0.75 milliseconds, which is about 1/4 of a meter. And if you want to do it in feet, that would be 3/4 of feet, 3/4 of a foot, give or take 9 inches, 8.5 inches. So that's how you do this. You can see there. Basically, it's 1 foot per millisecond, or there's really a little bit under 1 foot per millisecond. But the point is you can figure this out. Actually, it's a little bit over 1 foot per millisecond. Sorry, but. You just figure this out, whatever units you want. I don't care what units you use. Foot per millisecond is never quite accurate enough, but it's close enough. Usually you can figure out where your reflections come from.
So the problem is most of these tools that are free just give you time. You can't. Yeah. The ones that you pay some money for, you can actually get them to make this calculation for you and have it read directly in distance. So what we've got to do is we've got to do that manipulation ourselves, the calculation. So we're measuring in time, and then we convert it to distance.
But the key is you just multiply it by 343 meters, the amount of seconds by 343 meters, you get an answer. Or I don't know, I guess it's a little warmer in here. I usually use 1115, but speed of sound does change with temperature. You have to remember that quite a bit.
Let's see, you want to go back to...
Yeah, now can we go back to the...
Yeah.
So what do you do? The first thing you try to do is you try to look at the room, clap your hands, listen to the reflections, both the flutter stuff and any just sort of any place you can get a sense of a wall or something like that. Try to balance the sense of a wall and stuff, and you've got to kill the flutter. So something like that, they're really good for killing flutter echoes. You just block them. But you have to kill it somehow or other. You basically use a tool like this, you find the reflections, and we'll talk more about treatment. There's a lot of things you have to remember about treatment, because if you want to absorb bass, for instance, you don't put your foam on the wall. Remember, foam absorbs volume velocity. That's the air moving back and forth. Your wall is hard. Air doesn't move back and forth at the wall, so you have to put the foam away from the wall to absorb low frequencies. I have repeated this for years, and I still walk into every place and the foam's always in the wall. Although those people of you who have been to the office I work in, our foam isn't on the wall. We do a pretty good job of absorbing the bass reflections. Whoever's been there, I don't know. Think it works pretty well, Ben?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have a T60 in our room. You can't measure a T60. It's sort of like sound checks in, sound doesn't check back out of the walls. But we do when we want the room to be live, we make it live electronically. But that's a different story. You want to go to the next slide here?
How many feet of absorption do you have, though?
Well, there's a foot between the apparent wall and the really hard wall. Now, when we built it, we just had the hard walls. We had about 25-second T60. Literally, it just went on forever and ever and ever. So what we have is we have 4 inches of, rock wool in fireproof fabric hung 8 inches away, so it's a foot, the total thing is a foot, but 8 inches of air and 4 inches of rock wool. And that's the ceiling as well as all the walls, so the ceiling helps kill those longitudinal things that you might not kill with only a foot worth of stuff. So we really get good response down to around, well, we don't have a resonance at 11 hertz, but something in one of the other buildings near us generates 11 hertz. But that's the first time you see anything that looks like a line. And, yeah?
What's the polar of your transmitter?
Well, the reason that I didn't bring that up is because when you're doing this, you use the speaker that you're going to use. If you have something that has a tight beam, you might want to use those in a space like this, but then you want to make sure that the stuff behind you gets absorbed. So, you use the speakers you've got. You make the measurement with the speakers you're going to use is the answer to that. Yeah.
So there are speakers 100 degrees.
Yeah.
So putting, I've done that insulation out from the wall.
Yeah.
A couple inches or so. Like when in a smaller room, obviously your room shrinks. So
yes.
Is there
physics works? Yes.
Optimal. Like, is a couple inches fine? But if you can get it out farther.
Well, better. You figure that you start to get absorption when you hit between a tenth and a fifth of a wavelength. So if you get a foot, you're going to start absorbing at a 10-foot wavelength, which is 110 hertz. Okay, I mean, but if you have that on both walls, now it goes down half. You know, you just, there's unfortunately no nice answer to this. And the farther out, the better as far as absorption goes until you get ridiculous. But yes, of course, you also have to be able to get in a room. Yeah?
Or 7 and 3?
Well, since I don't actually know the characteristics of that stuff, I can't answer the question. Is this stuff all porous material?
Yes.
If it's all porous material, the only difference it will make is in the basic absorption of the material. So if you look at the basic rating of the material, the more absorbent, the better it'll work. But the distance, basically the distance...
Keeping the distance the same, just different materials.
If you use different materials and they have different ratings, you know, you'll get different absorption. That's the answer. I don't know any of the ratings of your material. So, but if they say that they have about the same absorption profile, then you're going to get the same result, as long as there's no membrane on it anywhere. Okay. Now you can try something where you put a membrane on something. This is like you've seen for some of the what do they call them, base traps. That's what that's trying to do, is that's trying to turn the pressure back into volume velocity. But you still have a problem with that, in that you have to still find a way to dissipate that energy. And if it's a foot, you know, if it's a foot from the wall, you know, the compressibility of that is going to limit your volume velocity. But it can help if you're desperate. The problem is then you have to put something in front of that to get rid of the high frequency reflections. Physics is fun. I don't know what to say.
Cavity was filled with, say, the rock wall. What difference would you see if you made a measurement?
It'd be better, but it's not that much better.
It doesn't detract.
It doesn't detract. No, doesn't hurt. Never hurts to have more absorption as a rule of thumb.
So, getting rid of the gap with absorption instead of a gap, is that better or worse?
A little better.
It is better.
A little better, okay. But farther away from the wall, the better it works.
So 12 inches of absorption is better than 8 inches of the 4-inch gap?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've heard people talk about slitting your drywall and using the actual wall and the insulation behind it. Has that got any merit to it?
Well, I don't think I want to do that in a portable venue where I don't own it.
Okay.
And the other thing, and also, there's another catch there. If there is a moisture membrane on the side next to the drywall, it's not going to do you much.
Well, I know, like, I don't in my house, but what is it, a Hez mold? You were talking those base trap type things, radiators.
Yeah.
If I was to perforate the drywall.
Well, the problem there, the problem with perforating the drywall or anything like that is the question is, what's the ratio of the open part to the part that's not open?
Yeah.
And if it's 90% still sealed and 10% open, you get a little bit of absorption, but not that much. On the other hand, you could turn it into a Helmholtz resonator, but without a whole lot of modeling. And this is, I can go through the math in about 4 hours. You can't be assured that it will do what you want. And you can pretty much be assured it will do something, but sometimes there might be a capital S on the something.
Work really hard to make the room acoustically flat, and then with the recording you add reverberation to it later?
You mean with our offices? Or what? No.
I'm just curious, can you have a room where you actually play the reverberation in it as opposed to trying to kill it?
That, if it's a very, if it's a large room that's diffuse, you can do that. But if we had a room like that, we wouldn't have a problem in the first place.
Sort of like the Columbia Studios.
So we're talking about mixing versus recording, right?
Yeah, we're talking about, we're not talking about the recording venue. We're talking about where you're mixing it.
Okay.
And a recording venue has a different set of requirements, and nobody likes to play in a dead venue because it gives you no feedback. But sometimes you can do surprisingly well if you record in a dead venue if the musician is willing to, if the musician doesn't come out and chase you around with a knife, you're okay. But it's nice to also be able to know what kind of acoustics you want. I mean, you want to record in the right acoustics. If you have a pipe organ, you probably want a giant room. If you're doing a string quartet, a little room that's nice and diffuse is probably a good thing. But for rock and roll, I don't know anything about. I've only ever done live sound for rock and roll, so I don't know.
So let me interject here. Steve, just as a reminder, from the very first slide, we talked, it said, you want me to mix in here? This is really oriented towards guerrilla mixers. You're going into a room, you don't get a whole lot that you can do with it. What can you do with it? We're showing you some inexpensive tools to help you figure out if there is anything you can do about it, and if so, what?
And also, fact, sometimes give you a rule of thumb to say nope.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit on symmetry versus asymmetry and why?
Well, symmetry is good for stereo because you'll have the same transfer function, but it also means you're going to basically double up on all the reflections. You're going to double up on all of the on all of the unwanted shaping.
So you want the same transfer function so the two speakers sound the same to you? Or?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the only way you'll get a good, if you're doing a stereo mix, it's the only way you'll get a good stereo mix. You want the same transfer function from both speakers. You want to match. But as soon as you do that, now you might be also creating a nasty mid-range peak or a total suck-out or something like that. So then you have to do something else to fix that. But first thing you want to do is try to set the thing up symmetric. And symmetric doesn't necessarily mean in the middle of the room on two sides. It might, some rooms you'd be better off in a corner on two sides of the corner and put a whole bunch of stuff behind you. It all depends on the room. You're going to try to, you want to, two things you want to do, maximize the distance to the first reflection. That picture we had there is catastrophic, by the way. You really don't ever want that. First, you want to maximize the distance to the first reflections if you can, and kill the later ones to the extent you can, and try to make them the same if you have to. And basically, what do? You walk in, you set up symmetry if you want, clap your hands. Anything you can hear when you clap your hands is going to be a disaster. So first thing you do is got to wipe that out. Usually you can localize that with your hearing. Like, yeah, it's coming from there and there. Okay, you take something, put it on the wall, put it in the floor, take a couple of those, whatever it takes to do it, make it go away. Once you've done that, maybe it's good enough. Maybe not, probably not, almost never is. So then you go on. So next one. Okay, now this is the point. You get frequency shaping, stereo imaging, and there's two things we're talking about. One of the things we're talking about is getting rid of first reflections, which will give you lots of frequency shaping at high frequencies. And you also want to try to get some similarity between the two speakers. Or, for instance, a pan pod or a time delay pan is just not going to work. It's going to give you all sorts of totally weird effects. So you want to try to balance things. And then you're going to get the later reflections is where the low frequency modes come from. Sometimes you can just work around the low frequency modes by just cutting down the power to the peaks. But there's something you have to remember. If you have something like a bass suck out, that means that the room stores too much energy. I'm making this point for a reason. Adding more energy will not solve your problem. It just means you're adding more energy to the disaster you've already run into. You need to put in some absorption somewhere. Once you kill the standing wave, your suck out will go away. And that's one of the things, this is really a point, do not fill big dips in a room response. No, it doesn't work. It's going to be awful. And if you move your head 3 feet, it's going to be dreadful. Yeah?
Are you going to talk about how to cancel some of those eigenmodes that you experience?
Well, the only way I'm going to talk about canceling eigenmodes is by like putting a gobo up or hanging something on the wall. Uh-huh. I'm not going to talk about electronic cancellation because you usually don't have the you probably don't have the chance to put up the five or six other speakers to kill the...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I mean, this is stuff that you can do, but probably not going to do when somebody says, go mix in that room. So we're talking No, you can do this. You can do things like that in a more sophisticated setup. But then you don't have this problem in the first place because you already fixed it. So, you know. Okay, now you want the frequency response. Now you'll notice there's a big periodic component to the frequency response. That's that reflection. It's a comb filler. You know, and this is the kind of thing, completely destroys articulation, makes everything sound like it's got a buzz. And you have to fix that. You just can't let it be. So I want to go back to the PowerPoint again. And there's a thing I need to point out here. We're using an Omni. Everybody uses an Omni. How much of the sound field at that point, see that point where that microphone is? How much of that sound field at that point are we capturing with that microphone? Is it all of the sound field? Half? A third? A quarter? Anybody want to guess? The answer is a quarter. The answer is a quarter. You have one pressure and three velocity variables at that point. And you know you're getting the pressure response of the room at that point. Now, at low frequencies, your ear responds to pressure. Because, you know, for wavelengths much bigger than your head, your ear responds to pressure. For wavelengths smaller than your head, your ear responds to pressure and velocity. So you have to remember that when you're doing this, you're only getting part of the information. But when you look at the reflections, you're also getting some information on the velocity, and this is telling you where you need to knock things down. So if you just look at the frequency response, you won't necessarily see all the frequency shaping that you actually hear. That's something to remember. And one of the things you can do is you can also try a cardioid. You can also try a figure eight. Sometimes a figure eight can be really useful. If you can't figure out where the hell is that coming from, you adjust the figure eight until you can't see it. And now you have the plane that it's coming from. And then you move the microphone a foot, and you adjust it again, and now it will point to where that problem is coming from.
So you're adjusting for a null?
You adjust it for null out the problem, move it around, and you can usually, you rotate the mic, of course, right. So you get all three dimensions. You can figure out where that's coming from. It tells you where to go hang something on the wall, basically. Yeah. And so that's something to remember. It's not just pressure. There's only one of variables. You're missing the response. And the other thing you're missing is a response at any other point in the room. Any live space has what's a coherence length, and I'll explain this in a second, that's shorter than a wavelength. What a coherence length is if I take two microphones and move them apart, how much correlation do I get at some frequency between the microphones? If you're in a live space, you lose the correlation well below a wavelength. So if you're talking about trying to make a measurement at 10 kilohertz, your two ears are going to get completely different results. So this is something you have to remember when you're doing the electronic correction, which is, by the way, the last thing. You do that, but it's the last thing you do. When you're trying to do electronic correction, you can't really correct for both ears. Because among other things, you could do it if you put mics in both of your ears and sat down and did the interaural cancellation stuff, but then you have to put a fixture on your head and not move your head, which presents its own set of difficulties. Go back. So remember, the Omni tells you one thing. Something that's entertaining if you're trying to track down bass modes is you can take an Omni, find the peak, or the null, take a cardioid, move it around, find where the null is. Lo and behold, there'll be a quarter wavelength apart. Because now you're finding where half pressure, you're going to find half pressure plus half wave plus half volume velocity if you move in the direction your reflection is coming from. And that will actually, yet another way, moving it around, if you find a lot of variation when you go like this with the cardioid, oh look, we need to fix those walls. something you can do, and something you don't have to be precise about. You get a good idea, oh, it's those walls. Of course, you can usually also look, if you have a big peak, you can also figure you have a complete wavelength when you go back and forth. So, you know, there's a number of ways to figure out what walls it is. Yeah?
So you can move it in one axis and, yeah, and see, oh, there's a high peak and dip here, but in this axis, it's okay.
Yeah. And you can, you will find stuff like that. Usually what you find is it's bad in all axes, but you try to find the worst one.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's really the truth in most small spaces. You're just trying to find the worst because you're never going to make it good. Go ahead. So more physics. If you're in a dip in a room response, like you're in a base suckout, that is a velocity peak. Now, this is the joy of using porous absorption. If you wanted to put the absorption, that would be the place it would work the best, which obviously presents a problem because that's always going to be the dead center in the middle of the room. Details, right? But it will give you an idea of, you know, maybe you want to put something on both sides of that. In some places, and I've actually wound up doing this some places I had to mix in, where you just set two things to the side, the speakers are here, you put two things right here. And it's not great, but it's a whole lot better than it was. So you have to play with this stuff. And there's no, and this point C, really, please, you really, really, really need to remember this. Do not try to fill in a suck out. I don't care if it's at 3 kilohertz or 3 hertz. Don't try to fill a suck out. You're just storing more energy in the room. If you have to, move the speakers, move the listening position, put in absorption, do something to get rid of the room mode, because you're just going to build in more hangover. And what's going to happen, even if you do get rid of the suck out, it's not complete suck out, you're going to have a hangover there. You're going to put energy in and it's going to sit there for 0.3 seconds and just sort of, instead of hearing the drum go boom, it's going to go boom, zoom. You've heard that sound, right? And that's a room hangover. You don't want that. And I'm not talking about the membrane resonance. You should hear the membrane resonance, I hope. So go ahead. Now what? This looks sort of recursive, doesn't it? Find out where the first reflection comes from. Fix it. Find out where the worst reflection... You notice it's very recursive, but this is what you do. And then finally, when you get it tolerable, that's good. And then you try your electronic. Then you try your electronic correction. So I think... Let's see, what do? Well, you hear it, like I said, if any place you hear it, you got to fix it. You can identify electronic collection as a last step, figure out where the reflections come from, absorb it. Like I said, you can use figure eight. If you've got a figure eight sitting up like this, you rotate it this way to figure out where the null is, and then you take it and put it like this and do this and do this, and lo and behold, you find out all the nulls point to one place. Go hang your panel. Or it might be two places, but life is like that. You know, sometimes just waving a cardioid around can get... Just going like this in a circle, if you see a peak, waving your cardioid around like this, you just found the direction of your big storage. So, you know, you can use that as well. And yes, these are all very approximate. If I actually was building something, I wouldn't do it this way. But I'm assuming you were handed this room and said, now cope, which is a different problem altogether. Next. Treating surface. Well, like I said, they all work on air movement, volume velocity. Walls, any reflective surface is a pressure maximum. Because, if the wall is moving... Which, by the way, will happen in some rooms with loose stud walls. You can actually find that the wall is not located. The acoustic position of the wall at low frequencies is not actually where the wall is physically, because it's got a resonance, so the impedance changes the apparent distance. Hopefully that's not the case, but it might be. If that's happening, maybe there are other issues. If the air's going through the wall, I'm curious. But if you put stuff next to the wall, most of the absorption is going to be at a quarter wavelength or lower. You get some down to a tenth, but not that much. So, 3-inch material on the wall, you get good absorption of about 1 kilohertz. move it three, you know, move it a foot out and you get good absorption down to like 250 hertz and some absorption down to 100. So there's your lesson there. I mean, it doesn't make it easy to do and it makes your room small, but if you're just mixing in there, you know, you doesn't hurt, you know. If you've got this much space but you can actually hear what's going on, you're better off than if you've got twice that much space and you can't understand a thing. So put it in the frame, whatever machine, you know. Now don't put it on the surface unless you're only worried about high frequencies. And sometimes you may be only worried about high frequencies. I can't predict a room except to tell you that it's probably going to be bad. And that's basically my, I think that's the end of my message, yes? Ceilings, well, ceilings are hard. Usually floor and ceiling aren't going to kill you unless you're really close to the floor or the ceiling. See what happens when you get close, for instance. You can hear the comb filtering even when I'm talking. But floor and ceilings, usually you're going to be 3 or 4 feet, and hopefully you're going to be close enough that maybe there's going to be a 6 or 7 millisecond path length, which isn't good, but it's also going to be knocked off by the inverse square law, so maybe it's not too bad. If you can, though, put something on the ceiling, but good luck with that.
Can the acoustic tile, you mentioned acoustic tile, but could that be something that would hold back the absorbent medium?
Acoustic tile is usually useless. I mean, Mark, you want
to... Is it porous enough to be part of the trap?
Mark?
Instead of your fabric?
If I had an hour or so, I could properly answer that question. There is good acoustical tile, but to do anything other than at the very high frequencies, it all relies upon the airspace behind, so you have to look at the entire ceiling construction as well as how the tile is made. Some tiles are porous and let the sound go into the space behind and is creating the airspace he's talking about, and some are not, and they're only effective at the higher frequencies. There's a lot of good data on them, including the way that they're mounted. Same tile mounted differently gives you a different profile. There's also a lot of bad data.
And there's also a lot of tiles that have a non-porous membrane on the back, and they just stink. I'm sorry.
Well, they can be effective at the high frequency.
They can be effective
at 5 kHz,
yeah,
maybe.
But you know, but that...
But that's usually not where your problem is.
That's never where you have the real problem, because your speaker's probably beaming at that point anyhow.
And there was another problem with tile that Max said, I think, about getting painted.
Oh, yeah, if you paint it, you just completely forget it, then it's dead.
Then it's no longer acoustical.
There's a similar problem. A friend of mine used to actually do maintenance on planetariums. You know how they all have holes? And those holes are there for a reason, so that the sound doesn't all focus to the middle. And a lot of places paint the planetarium and fill up all the holes. And he made a lot of money climbing up on ladders and poking holes. I mean, he also fixed the projector mechanisms, but there's a reason for all those holes in the planetarium, though. The rule of thumb, if you seal it, it doesn't work very well.
JJ, on floors, what are different carpets do?
Generally, they're not great. They do high frequency. But a lot of these, like this, will actually have a fair amount of high frequency reflection. Usually they have more absorption, and then they start to bounce at real high frequencies again. But then again, since most speakers are beaming, you know, the high frequencies aren't getting there, you're good. Which is something I didn't put in here, but I'll mention. If you have a speaker, like an MTM speaker, that actually has a controlled vertical dispersion, use it, for Pete's sake, use it. Because that will help keep the stuff off the ceiling and the floor. In some places, you may find that it's disgusting and you want to turn it sideways and use it to keep it off the walls. If it sounds good, do it. You know, if you can use this pattern control, use the pattern control. Okay? I mean, you use anything you can get. And when I say here, early reflections, they really can mess up stereo imaging because they'll give you different zeros on the two sides and things will move around. Things that should be in the middle will move around and not have an image at all sometimes. You know, it does all sorts of stuff all bad, okay? Early here means under 5 or 10 milliseconds, side walls, back walls, maybe ceiling and floor. Those are what you go after. The late reflections, this is the base modes. This can be tough. If you're in a long hallway or something like that, put a gobo behind you or something if you can. Just try to make it not go all the way to the other end of the hallway. Because if you can hear an echo in the hallway, you're never going to be able to, it's just not going to work for you. And spaced absorption, always space it. Having long lengths in the direction of the mode of absorption away from the walls, that really is a key. And you have to know the direction, of course. You know, I think we already I already talked about all of this. You can use the figure eight to find it. You can find the direction of the reflection sometimes with the cardioid. Just going like this will sometimes show you a remarkable thing like peak, peak. Okay, so it's that direction. You know, that will tell you something. Figure eight's more accurate, but use what you got. Absorption. You have both. You have neither in your makeshift setup. Diffusion. Forget about diffusion for this application. You're not going to get good diffusion in this application. Just go for absorption. Kill it. Yes, diffusion is a good thing, but not in a temporary setup. Where are you going to leave tomorrow?
What about if you have a bedroom that you're converting into your mixed room?
Then you might want to add some diffusion, but it depends. I'm not, you notice nowhere here did I say live end, dead end. Because live end, dead end is not really the best mixing strategy for modern recordings. You just want a dead room, and you want to put into the room whatever you want the listener to hear, because it's probably going to be in headphones. And if it's not in headphones, most people don't have a proper listening setup. So live in, dead in, I'm not a big fan of. You can do that, but when you set up live in, dead end, what you're doing is you're going to set up a direct reverberate ratio that you can't change. And different genres like to have different direct reverberate ratios. You know, if you're talking about a little tiny club, it's all direct. If you're talking about a pipe organ, it's basically there is no direct. You can't, you know, you can make a live end dead room where you can change the direct to reverberant ratio, but that's pretty complicated. You know, if your name isn't Tom Holman, you probably aren't going to get to build the room.
Or Chip
Stavis. Who?
Chip Stavis.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can do there's a few people that can do it, but that's not going to be cheap, is it?
Yeah.
So basically, I would prefer a room that's well-treated and doesn't have any bad modes. For that, you know, the space, you know, stuff spaced in, make the room a little bit. Some material, if you're doing it in your bedroom and you can stand 7 foot high, just covering the ceiling, just you use one of the suspended ceiling things with a 3-inch foam 2-foot panels. You know what I'm talking about, right? Those actually work really well. It just was space above it. But make sure your supports don't rattle, please. That can be... What?
Sweep the room.
Sweep the room. Listen for the rattles. Listen for...
Well, be surprised what rattles.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Everything.
I wouldn't, but the answer is he's absolutely correct. Pretty much everything will rattle given the right stimulus.
So how do you solve that?
You find out what it is, and you make it not rattle.
Use a hammer.
Sometimes using a hammer.
Pour concrete.
That works. We did that.
Sometimes duct tape will fix it.
Yeah. You know, if it's a metal-to-metal thing, make it not loose. You know, if it's suspended ceilings, make sure that all the hangers are tied down tight. If the joints don't fit together that well, a little Eastman 910 can solve that problem really nicely. Squirt, you know, don't be light with it, just soak the sucker and make it stop. And I don't like suspended ceilings because they like to rattle, but sometimes you don't have any choice.
JJ.
Yeah?
Just about eliminating buzz, squeak, and growl, we deal with that on the wall. And there's three major ways you can do it. Add mass, create a crash condition, and push them together.
Yeah.
Or you eliminate any type of touching.
Yep.
So
yep.
That's the only three ways you can do it.
Yep. Yeah, and this is one of the things, mass, sort of hard to replace, isn't it? Especially in car doors. And by the way, I should find you after the talk, because there's some interesting issues. No, I don't have a problem. No, I don't have a problem with my car. I don't expect, on the other hand, I don't expect to get good sound in my car. You know, automotive, to me, automotive sound is a lot like, civil servant or something, you know? Although I know good civil servants, too. So now I will hand it over to Bob, who can demonstrate all of this measurement stuff.
Is this a good time for break?
Yes.
Okay. And who do I owe this to? Okay. Yeah.